I'm Daisy.
And I'm Terry.
And this is the Monday Mindset Podcast,
where we share things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 5. This week, it's Terry's turn to share something that she's found interesting over the past week. What have you got to share with us today, Terry?
Okay, Daisy. So I keep finding things that have so many interesting pieces and parts to them that we could do like a 2-hour podcast, but I'm going to try and narrow it down. So I listened to one of my favorite podcasts, and generally it's impact theory, but this one was under health theory. So it's Tom Bilyeu. I'm not sure if he has 2 podcasts actually.
Oh, I heard an episode of his on Rongen's podcast. He's great, isn't he?
Oh my gosh.
In fact, I think it's on my list for another day.
And he gets the best guests. So I listened to so many episodes. But this one was with a neuroscientist, Andrew Huberman, out of Stanford. It's just this fascinating talk about the brain, which I think is really informative for all of us to decide how we could use some of this information, kind of like we talked about last week, kind of that biohacking. Once we know some things about how our brain works, we can start to affect it. The topic was about how to create a growth mindset. And this has been a topic I've talked about a lot in my last year or two in my career. And the growth mindset comes from a book by Carol Dweck, and it's about the difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. So it's really kind of about having an open mind to what's possible versus I can't do this as if it's a fixed trait. But this guy goes into the neuroscience of it and just so many little pearls of wisdom in this talk. First, he just talked about our nervous system and that basically it has 5 functions. It senses, it creates perceptions, feelings, thoughts, and then actions. And so then he talked for the rest of the time about how it does this. And actually, our nervous system even governs our immune system. It tells the immune system when to turn on and turn off. So he was talking about the brain and he was talking about the whole nervous system. And he talked about we actually have part of our brain that is not in our skull, but it's actually at the back of our eyes. And it's called the neuroretina. It kind of pushed to the surface from our brain so that it can get information from the outside world. And it's this layer of cells at the back of our eye. And its purpose is that it can detect light. And you've heard me talk about this. Anyone who's talked to me probably in the past few years knows I talk a lot about light, blue light, morning sunlight, everything. And he said this part of our brain really, it detects the contrast between yellow and blue light. So in the morning, as the yellows are getting brighter and the blues are getting darker, it triggers our cortisol response. So it gives us energy to start our day. It gets us going. And then in the evening, toward sunset, the blues are getting brighter and the yellows are decreasing. So that triggers the melatonin. And really, this whole system is what helps our body know when to be awake and alert and when to be calm and sleep. So, Daisy, I'm afraid you're not going to like some of this information. One of the things you talked about then is this part of our brain is really sensitive to screen time, particularly from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. And so it also made me think about often in the middle of the night, I will wake up and look at my phone and do a couple of messages or something. And so I need to stop that. But what happens is when our brain is exposed to bright light between these hours, it activates a part of our brain called the habenula. And this triggers a disappointment response by suppressing dopamine.
Wow.
And so if you think about many of us who are up late at night on screens or look at our phone or iPad or whatever during the night, we are actually interfering with our dopamine processing. So that's one problem with it. And then the other is that this habenula is also connected to the pancreas or triggers responses in the pancreas that interferes with blood sugar moderation. So I am definitely going to stop touching my screens after that time. But anyway, So if you think about if our goal is to have a growth mindset, part of that is we need to have good experiences. We need to feel good. And so dopamine plays a big role in that. Dopamine is connected to the anticipation and the steps toward a goal. And a lot of us think about a goal as the end result, that we're going to get a reward basically at the end of reaching this goal. I remember first hearing this talked about in James Clear's book, Atomic Habits. Talked about that we get some of a rush just deciding something or planning something, not even in the execution of it. And that oftentimes when we actually get to the end of the goal, it's almost anticlimactic, but it's the building up to it that we get some of this rush from. So in this podcast episode, he was talking about if we want a growth mindset, we need to start working on connecting a dopamine response with the little steps of getting somewhere rather than anticipating a big feel-good feeling at the end. And then he goes in to talk about other types of responses in our body. And generally, we have circuits for winning and we have circuits for quitting. Scientists have actually been able to find locations in our brain that help us to understand this. But basically, stress, it can be a good thing because it kind of agitates us. It causes some discomfort, which moves us to take action. So that's actually a good thing. So this is the circuit for winning. And they found one study, they look at rats or mice, and they see that one of them needs to kind of push the other one out of the circle or whatever. And the one that wins generally will win in repeated efforts. Something happens in its brain by winning. Similarly, we have a circuit for quitting. So the one that loses will generally lose again in subsequent efforts. And so they really started to look at why is this? And again, went into more of the neurophysiology of what happens. It's important, I think, to understand that success builds on success. Feeling defeated leads us to feel more defeat. There's actually something going on biologically that drives those. And then he started talking about a type of therapy, EMDR. And he used this example because it teaches us something really fascinating about the brain. And if you know much about EMDR, it stands for eye movement, desensitization, and reprogramming. The woman who created this therapy modality realized that by having us move our eyes laterally, what it does is it turns off the threat detection system in our amygdala. So we don't have to go into fight or flight with our eyes moving like this. What happens with this movement is it also then triggers some dopamine response because rather than staying stuck in freeze mode, moving forward, we need that push. And so it actually gives us a little bit of dopamine for moving forward. And so if we think about when we are struggling with something, and they use an example, if you want to run a marathon, you don't go out and run a marathon. You start the first day by putting your shoes by the door, and then you run around the block and you keep increasing it. But part of why that's so important or what we need to do to make that work is we need to celebrate those steps, those progressive successes, so that we get that dopamine and then we'll keep going for that dopamine response. Rather than, I'll feel good when I run the marathon. No, we need to get into that place of being able to feel good while we're working toward a goal. And that this really makes a difference in how we work toward things.
So you're kind of, it's sort of gaming the system a bit, but you're breaking it down into these small wins to have that same, that build-on effect that you spoke about with the rats. Every time it won, it was more likely to win the next time. Instead of having to win the big goal, you have little goals that if you keep winning those, it helps build the momentum in the direction you want to go in.
And as I was listening to that, it made me think about old sayings that we all have heard. You know, we have quotes about it's not the destination that's so important, it's the journey. Mm. And I've always been one to say this to people. And I remember for years as a psychologist, I would always try to get people to focus on the process rather than just the result. And now listening to this, it was so exciting because it actually explained the neuroscience of why that works. So I felt pretty validated that my point was important. I just didn't know why it was important in the past. But also, again, that using these responses to lean forward into action rather than to kind of stay stuck or stay still, forward movement. And then if you think about that, it's not just physical movement forward, but also psychological movement forward.
I was going to ask you a couple of things. Mm-hmm. I was getting really confused at the beginning when you were talking about yellow light versus blue light. I thought it was blue light during the day. I thought it was blue light that you blocked at night, not the other way around. Or is this a different kind of yellow and blue light?
Well, everything I had learned about that in the past really focused on blue light. And of course, you know, any scientist you follow is going to kind of poo-poo one theory and highlight a different theory, maybe. So his thing is that we've been too focused on the destructive part of blue light, that's not the only issue at play here. That really this part of our brain, this neural retina, its function is to detect the variation in the yellow and the blue. And that's why morning sunlight is so important and evening sunlight is so important. So within an hour or two of sunrise and within an hour or two of sunset. And usually we can't even really see these shifts happening. But even someone who is blind can still, their brain will still pick up this information because it's not an actual.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
It's not a visual thing, but it's that this mechanism of the change of the yellow and the blue, the contrast, that's what sets up this whole circadian rhythm and affects what patterns our hormones are on. And, you know, it says at this time, the liver is going to become more active. And at this time, this system is going to be more active. So again, my concern is with, you know, the amount of technology that so many of us use, especially late into the night, how much we can be interfering with so many things about our biology and everything, but even about our ability to have a more growth mindset, to see things positively and to be willing to keep learning and growing. If we're using technology at night and depressing our dopamine system, that's going to make that really hard to, you know, we're going to feel like we're fighting a much harder battle to try and improve that during the day in our conscious thoughts.
When you were talking about the impact it has on dopamine, and I was thinking about people on social media, and I was wondering how much that played into their mood and how they're feeling and the kind of interactions people have on social media, and perhaps when they get into some of these Facebook arguments and things. I just wonder, is there a difference what time of day you're doing that? Maybe, you know, maybe it can impact you. Also, if there's this impact on dopamine with the light levels and they're different at night than they are in the morning, and then what you were talking about being productive and steps towards goals, what I'm wondering is if you're more likely to be more productive if you're doing things in the morning. And I'm thinking about discussions we've had with what I've been trying to do of getting up earlier, because as you know, and a lot of people who listen to me will know, my sleeping patterns, I have to say were pretty awful. And I was getting up very late, going to bed very late. And I've been commenting to you, haven't I, that the earlier I've been getting up, the earlier I've been starting to do work and to do outside work, doing work on the computer. And I feel I'm a lot more productive and get a lot more done. So I'm just wondering, when you mentioned that about dopamine and the impact it could have later on in the day, whether the opposite is true if you're focusing on being productive in the morning.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory. I don't know. My guess is that certainly could be a factor, but I think also if you go back to just the part of being up later, exposure to blue light in the evening, particularly screen, bright light, even just in our homes, if we have bright lamps on and things, that it suppresses the dopamine. It creates what he referred to as like a disappointment response. Our body is motivated to seek things, and it is kind of punishing when we move away from them. And so when we are doing this system opposite of what it should be, we get the negative response from it. And so actually, again, the dopamine decreases. So I would also think, I don't know if this is one of those, which comes first, the chicken or the egg. Mm-hmm. Is it because of that, that motivation feels better during the day? And so you get more done. Does that matter what time of day you're getting things done? I know there's lots of people who have theories about different people, some people being more night owls and some people being more morning people. But I guess I just think about when I heard this, I really thought about conversations you and I had had about as your sleep has gotten more and more off, your mood was also more and more off. Mm. And it seems like as you've been bringing your sleep into more of those regular sleep hours, that has been having a positive effect on mood. So I really thought about, what does this mean for you as far as just your dopamine system?
I mean, it kind of makes sense to me. You think what we're built for, you know, we're built for being energetic during daylight hours, mm-hmm. and we're built for everything being a bit more depressed and toning down to go to sleep when it's dark. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that if we try and play around with that too much, it's going to impact our mood and our productivity. Mm-hmm. Is brain spotting is similar to EMDR? Is it a mm-hmm. sort of subset of EMDR mm-hmm. that can be really useful for helping treat trauma?
Yes, because what happens is while your eyes are moving back and forth, the rapid eye movement, again, while you're thinking about a trauma that happened, you're not activating that part of the amygdala that causes the fight or flight response. So it's actually able to kind of get through it. And instead, you can then connect it to something else, a different response, so that you don't have to keep having that PTSD response.
Mm, it's supposed to be very good for treating that, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So it's funny how all these things tie in. It's changing these connections, these perceptions. And it is possible to switch from one kind of association, which is negative, to changing that to a positive association.
So it's made me think about, as I was listening to the podcast again, it made me think of everything you and I talked about recently, the power of the gratitude journal. And, you know, again, here is some neuroscience behind why that is a good strategy. Talking about the placebo and nocebo effect and how we heal our body. This, again, these are some neurological ways to understand what's going on. The movement and what you talked about last week with exercise and movement, how it can, you use the example that I think Kelly McGonigal had talked about. If you're exercising and it's an unpleasurable experience because you're out of breath and you're sweaty, well, yeah, you're going to be having stress responses and you're going to want to quit those responses. But by moving, again, that allows the amygdala to quiet and it allows some dopamine response. So you start to pair, I'm hot and sweaty and having fun, I feel good as I'm doing this, then it becomes a positive thing.
Well, it's fascinating how the mind works.
It certainly is.
And the brain.
Absolutely.
And the, what was it called? The part of the brain behind the eye?
The neural retina.
And the neuroretina. Yeah.
So I guess the thing I want to make sure is when I think back to when I talk about growth mindset, it makes it sound like you just need to change the way you think. And I think there are more steps involved that we can use to create our growth mindset even more effectively. and really paying attention to taking a step forward, leaning into things.
And small steps.
Small steps. So building.
But actually, small steps can have quite a big impact.
Absolutely. So again, that means building in the smaller dopamine responses all the way through the process so that you feel rewarded for the process, not just the result. And I always try and say it this way to clients. I think sometimes people think, okay, well, then I'm just going to say everything's great. Like, they came home, they had a really horrible day, but they say, I love my job and it was great. Well, that's not, your brain doesn't believe that. But instead to say, today was a really rough day and I did a really good job managing it. I got through that call without getting irritated with my boss and saying something I shouldn't say. That was really good. I'm really getting good at this. Those small pieces of positive feedback, build that in. Versus just tell yourself it was great. I don't think that works.
Mm. Yeah. And again, thinking back to last week and how Kelly was talking about how your brain can forget these things. And, you know, she was maintaining that exercise or some kind of movement in short bursts is the best way to get your brain to relearn those feelings of reward and hope. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a similar thing. It's just, it's not trying to force something. You can actively take these little steps to teach your brain, especially if it's in a depressed mode and if it's sort of forgotten how to recognize some of these signs, you can actually get it to relearn with these little steps.
Yes. Another big thing they talked about is we're often taught just don't have negative thoughts. And Dr. Huberman said, you know, it's kind of hard to just interrupt negative thoughts. But more important, we can do subjective injection of positive things. And that can be what builds that momentum. We actually do get to choose those thoughts. And so highlighting the negative less, but interjecting those positive ones, we can insert them. Similarly, the mice that I talked about where the one who won would keep winning, they even did studies where they pushed the mouse to win and it won more after that, even if it didn't win on its own account, even because it was pushed. And they even then found some chemical way they could alter that and they could turn the winning one into a losing one, and they could turn a losing one into a winning one. So that subjective injection of a positive thinking, how powerful that can be.
I can see how that potentially can play into all sorts of things like gambling, and my mind is going down various tracks. But we're at that time where we've got to wrap it up. It's fascinating hearing what's actually going on and how things behave and how I react at different times of the day and night. So it's going to help even more with trying to get my sleep patterns optimized, shall we say. I hope everyone at home has found it as interesting as I have, hearing what you've had to share this week, Terry. So I hope you have a good week, and I hope everyone at home has a good week.
Have a good one, everybody.